Good morning. This is Sunday in Eastern Carolina. My name is Jeff Diamond. We come to you every Sunday morning bringing you interesting guests on a variety of interesting topics. My guest this morning, over the phone by way of Lake Arrowhead, California, up in the mountains, is author Rich Levy, Dr. Rich Levy. The name of the book, Ride the Storms, Lessons of the Journey Taken on a Road Less Traveled. And it's one of those proverbial, you can't put the book down, 475 plus pages. And first of all, Dr. Levy, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me on. I'm glad to be part of any discussion you wish to carry forward.
Well, this is an amazing journey. It's an amazing story. You know, overcoming tragedy, perseverance. There's a horrific car accident, the wife's suicide attempts. It's just a great journey. Your rejection from med school. I gather this book, I don't know, I kind of like had a feeling it was Hunter S. Thompson meets Jack Kerouac and maybe a whole lot more. Would you agree with my assessment there?
Pretty much so. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I was asked very early on in the game when I started medical school in Boston in 1976 was if I had read Jack Kerouac's On the Road.
Right.
And my comment at the time was, no, that I had not, because I felt like I had just lived the story, so I didn't feel the particular need to read it. But in fact, I did read it again, or read it for the first time, when I was preparing writing this book, because I figured since so many people had asked me about it, I would go ahead and read it anyway, just to make sure I heard the story and read it, and so I did, but I appreciate your bringing it up.
Well, you know, let's first of all give our listeners your credentials. You received your MD from Boston University, your PhD in biophysics from UC Berkeley. You're on many boards, internal medicine, oncology, just an amazing list of academic things that you've done. But this story really talks about, you know, early rejection, doesn't it?
Well, yes, although I think that the early rejection is often a common theme in life that everybody goes through in various forms, and one of my motivations for writing the story, other than that I thought it was an interesting story to tell, was to help motivate other people who are dealing with their own adversities or rejections or things of that nature, that sometimes there's hope even when it seems that there is none if they just keep trying the best they can, and my effort is to try to motivate other people to move in that direction even when things do look bleak.
In the promotional advertisements and promotional literature, one of the things it says is from pothead to PhD, doctor overcomes adversity, goes on to pioneer treatment of lethal brain lesions. That pretty much sums up a lot of things in your life, doesn't it?
Well, yes, it does. I went down the pathway of more than a few youthful indiscretions in my younger days, and that put me on a detour and delay mode for a good number of years, but it helped set the stage for me to make the recovery later. And even though I don't recommend being a stoner to anybody, I think it's more that if you move forward beyond that, you can achieve great things, even if you wasted some of your years in your youth being a stoner.
This is something, I mean, you look back to your early part of your life, you wanted to be in medicine. I mean, I got the feeling, you know, that you had to deal with all these rejections and 99 med schools in 4 years, but this is something that really does teach a lesson, doesn't it?
I think it does. When I was a teenager or a mid-teenager, I decided there were three things I wanted to be when I grew up: a physician, a scientist, and a professional football quarterback.
Right, I remember, yeah.
So I managed to do two out of three, and I still regret that I allowed myself to get into a stupid fight with the head coach in college about the length of my hair at the time, and even though I still think it was a stupid argument, if I had to do it over again, I would have cut my hair anyway just to see how far I could have gotten. But, you know, I'm not sure I would have gotten all that far, but I still regret that I allowed myself to get detoured by not following what seemed like a stupid rule at the time.
You had some, I just think you had some really cool parents. You had some great friends. Talk about the relationship, you and your mom and dad, and some of these friends that you traveled with.
As far as my mom and dad are concerned, I think that they were generally fairly low-key parents in terms of not forcing me or trying to force me to do anything, except they demonstrated by their example that if you just sort of keep trying and keep working hard, you can achieve a lot. And they never gave me a direct lecture in a more traditional didactic lecture form, but just watching them behave themselves, I always saw that very, very little complaints came from them at any time, no matter how bad things were around. And I think in some way that led me to pursue that same sort of pathway, even though they never lectured to me and said, hey, boy, suck it up. None of that ever happened. But I just saw them doing it without complaining, and I think that helped direct me to move in that direction. And as far as my friends are concerned, I've had and still do friends across a broad spectrum, some admittedly more successful than others, but I'm still happy I'm friends with many of the same friends that I met when I was in elementary school that even scattered across the country in various places. I still see the same friends when we meet each other every 6 months or every couple of years, and we still all like each other, and friends are excellent creatures to have in your life.
Well, let's talk about the medical school aspect of this book, the name of the book, Ride the Storms, Lessons of the Journey Taken on a Road Less Traveled. We're talking to Dr. Rich Levy. Let's talk about the medical school years. What stands out to you?
Well, I think it was a rather dramatic change of lifestyle to start medical school in a cosmopolitan environment like Boston, because the last job that I had before starting med school in Boston was being a commercial halibut fisherman out of Kodiak, Alaska, which is about as diametrically opposite as you can get to go in from being in a wild and crazy place with a life-threatening job and more than a few crazy knife-wielding sociopaths to then being a proper and prim medical student in Boston. But once I transitioned into that, it was to me just fun. It was a lot of work, but fun because I was learning things that I found interesting. And so for me, academics was never a burden in any way. I just found it a fun thing to sit and learn and listen and talk. And I never felt stressed out by there being so much work to do, because the more work there was to do, the more I felt like, hey, I was just learning more information that made me feel better about my knowledge of the universe. And that's kind of how I've tried to lead my life as best I can.
Yeah, we want to talk a little bit about the horrific car accident in 2004, but let's stay on the theme of what you have pioneered, basically, in treatment of lethal brain lesions. Tell us about that finding.
I had decided, firstly, in my years of trying to get into medical school unsuccessfully, but realizing that I could be accepted into PhD work at Berkeley in biophysics, that was more to my mental tune to begin with anyway as exploratory work. So after I finished medical school and did my first residency program in internal medicine, which was in San Francisco, I rejected all of the recommendations made to me by my chief of medicine, et cetera, to go on with a fellowship in cardiology, pulmonary, or another field, and said, I'm going to go back to Berkeley anyway and pursue my dream in medical science. And as I went to meet the potential professors on day number one, the last guy I spoke with on the first day was an MD-PhD guy who was working with the particle accelerators in the Berkeley Hills, the ones that had been created by the Nobel laureate Ernest Lawrence. And my mentor, Jack Fabricant, and I spoke for 2.5 hours that day. And I immediately saw him as somebody I'd like to be 25 years from now. And he saw me as the protege he never had. And we just connected. And he taught me a lot of these things as a master apprentice in the years before any of these things later took on popularity in conventional medicine. Now, as far as the particulars, what it was using charged particle beams from synchrocyclotron accelerators, which are fancy big machines that accelerate particles like protons or the nucleus of helium atom, and aim them at people's bodies with millimeter accuracy, and especially in the brain. And that's what we were focused on. So pretty much, even though these accelerators were designed originally as atom smashers, what I wound up doing was essentially doing brain surgery with an atom smasher, to use a phrase we came up with.
And obviously this type of pioneered medical event, you know, is something, you know, you're treating these patients now with physical trauma. Obviously, you know, you're going into the brain. And then juxtapose that with the trauma that you had in 2004, the horrific car accident in California. Not so much that you remember because you were in a coma. It sort of had to been reenacted by police photos and detectives out there. Take us through that traumatic experience in your life.
The accident was, I was driving home from work on a Tuesday early evening in mid-January, very clear roads, no weather conditions whatsoever. And as I was driving up the mountain, it's about a 20-mile drive up from the base of the mountain up to where I live, but about a mile and a half above the valley floor, going around a big 180-degree turn in the road, I got nailed by an out-of-control 18-wheeler big rig truck that had burnt out his brakes driving up and down the mountain roads and was spiraling out of control. And to save himself from going off the cliff, he detoured over in a way that had him coming three lanes across and over the center divide and jackknifed around with his rock-laden trailer, and happened to hit me with perfect timing as I was coming around a turn in the road where I had very little visibility looking forward. And the only reason I know this is from all the pictures, because I have zero memory. 6 hours beforehand is gone and 7 weeks forward, and none of that has ever come back. But I know the story from the pictures and the written records and things of that nature. So it was not a fender bender. It was definitely a big bang.
And your colleagues basically were there with you through all this and, you know, put you back together. Crazy experience to have to go through that.
Of course, I think it was craziest of all for my wife and kids, because they were conscious and aware of all these things going on. And I have zero memory of anything. I remember the day before quite well, because I remember being at the Staples Center watching the Lakers play the Cleveland Cavaliers when LeBron James was with them in his rookie season. But at the 7 weeks forward, all that period is just deleted permanently. So my wife and kids were very distraught and emotionally upset. And all of them, all of my friends and all of my kids heard the doctors telling them that I was a goner, that I had almost no chance at all. And in the unlikely event I came back at all, they expected me to be quadriplegic, paraplegic, or in a vegetative state of brain damage. And somehow my wife, in her own manner, just blanked out the whole thing and just kept on sitting there every day for hours expecting me to wake up. And after a while, I did.
A traumatic experience in your life. You mentioned your wife, Donna. She has had to deal with another traumatic experience that your whole family has. Talk about your wife, Donna, and subsequent, after your ordeal, her suicide attempts, and how you guys were able to cope with that.
Approximately 4 years after my near-death experience, she went through her own period of major depression, which led her to make several suicide attempts on her own life. And I perhaps should have been more aware of what was going on, but maybe I was so busy recovering from my own stuff or so focused on other things, I somehow, even as a trained neuroscientist, was oblivious to the major depression that she was having and the severity of it. And even though in my earlier years I'd spent a lot of time as a frontline responder, being both in the world of oncology and decades earlier in the world of emergency medicine, it was quite a different experience to be the frontline responder for my own wife, who I've known for decades and decades, because as of now we're married 31 years and counting. So it wasn't like someone I never knew, but I just was oblivious to the fact that she was going through her own period of major depression that led her to try these suicide attempts. So it's certainly wasn't a journey for the faint-hearted.
Yeah, you've really had some great success, and it's your one-man survival story, your family survival story. Ride the Storms is the name of the book. You survived all these hitchhiking episodes on six major continents, and then surviving this horrific car accident in 2004, and your wife's suicide attempt. You can't top this type of story, it seems, unless you've got something on tap also after this book.
I'm just trying to move on as best I can to further advance the things that I know about in particle beam therapy, which I think are improved treatment techniques for people dealing with many types of cancer. And I guess I've never been the type of person who spends too much time feeling sorry for myself or hiding in the corner. As a matter of fact, in some interviews I've had about my book, the subject of my personal car accident never comes up at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the reason that that's the case is I don't really think of it as that major an event in my own life. It's other things going on around me. And when I think about the accident, my thought is usually, okay, all right, well, what's next now? Let's move forward. I know I'm alive. Maybe I shouldn't have been by logic, science, and reason, but here I am anyway, so there's no point in bemoaning my fate when I'm alive. And I'm well aware that many really good people have died despite my personal best efforts to save them over the years and years of playing doctor. And I don't want to take or waste any time feeling sorry for myself when I survived anyway.
We've got about a minute left. Tell us about the RideTheStorms.com website.
Okay, that's a website that I created myself as a venue where anybody who's interested in learning more about me or about my book can access RideTheStorms, no spaces, RideTheStorms.com. And when they get on there, they can find out more story about me and read reviews that other readers have made about it. And radio interviews as they become available that I put on there, and also vendor access for people who want or are interested perhaps in an e-book like a Nook or a Kindle or printed versions of it. So I created it as an easy pathway for anybody who wants to find out more about me and about this story.
Well, it is a remarkable story. Dr. Rich Levy, thanks for joining us this morning and being part of the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate that, and the show goes on.
Absolutely, and that is our show for this Sunday morning's edition of Sunday in Eastern Carolina. If you'd like to be part of an upcoming show, just call me at 252-757-0011. We'll talk to you again next Sunday morning.